Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Dash Radio app or dashradio.com. Also on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Make sure you're liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show. That's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure that you are following the Locked On Podcast Network. There is a ton of great shows, a lot of great NBA content from the teams that are looking to make the playoffs. So make sure you're following those other teams for the up-to-date and latest coverage of some of the playoffs teams going on. And even if you wanted to check in on some of the tanking teams, all of those podcasts are fantastic. Make sure you're liking them and following them on the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We have our voicemail and text line as well, 331-979-1369. Our email box has been flooded with texts, and so we appreciate that. Even from just watching Bulls games, if you're sitting there and you want to react to somebody or something, you don't use Twitter, or you just like to send a text to us, make sure you're using that line because we're getting a ton of text messages. It's awesome. It's bringing up new topics and conversations that we understand that you guys want to hear from. So it's been great. So keep doing that for us. 331-979-1369 is the line. You can text us there and you can leave us voicemails. So either one is perfect. We're going to plan on, if we get enough voicemails, to play the best ones during our mailbag segment on Wednesday. So if you have some type of rant that you want to leave us, we would love to have it and be able to play the best ones on our show on Wednesday. So that's there for you. Once again, 331-979-1369. So me and Matt are back on the pod here after I guess I shouldn't say it's disappointing, but for me, it's disappointing. Matt, I'm sure for you, it's disappointing that we watched the Bulls beat another tanking team in the Dallas Mavericks on Friday. As well as we had Coles Wicker on the show too, to talk a little bit about college basketball on the show on Friday. So all of that mixed in. But how was your weekend, Matt? How you doing?
It was great. I was actually out of town visiting a good dear college friend of mine in Cleveland. So I had a little road trip, a lot of driving for a short weekend, but it was good. Appreciate you holding it down on Friday. And to any of our Locked On Bulls listeners who didn't get a chance to listen to that episode Jordan did with Coles Wicker, highly recommend you go back and give it a listen. I listened to it while I was driving back from Cleveland last night, actually. And it's a really great listen. The guy is one of the best in the biz when it comes to looking at these college prospects. So definitely enjoyed that. And then, yeah, unfortunately, the not so fun part of the weekend was seeing the Bulls eke out a win against the Dallas team that they are chasing in the tankathon standings. And I mean, it's just like all of these wins in a season where we're trying to, especially now with the roster changes and the final 20-25 games, trying to get back into that top three, top five conversation. You like to see the losses, but it's also not all that hard when the reasons for the wins are strong games from some of these young pieces the Bulls are trying to build around and build with. And I mean, what can you say about the night that Bobby Portis had against Dallas? I mean, he played lights out and had a couple of, you know, consecutive, made 2, 3, 4 big plays in a row down the stretch to help the Bulls win that game. So you don't like the fact that they beat Dallas for the sake of the tankathon standings, but you really like what you saw from Bobby Portis.
Yeah, that's somebody I want to get into on the show too. a little bit more in depth, just because Bobby Portis is now going to be implemented into the starting rotation. But I want to stay with this Mavericks game for a second, because outside of sort of a slow start for the Bulls, I guess offensively what we were talking about when they were kind of sliding and skidding was getting off to these terrible starts, especially at the back half of January and into February, sort of struggled. We even heard Zach LaVine touch on it, especially before the All-Star break, about how the Bulls just needed to get kick-started here. Obviously, giving 32 points up to Dallas in the first quarter was something that maybe if you're a Tank fan, you were excited about. But for the Bulls, in terms of their on-court play, not a good look. But Dallas helped the Bulls out here in two ways. They scored 17 points in that second quarter. Didn't look a whole lot better than what the Bulls were doing in the first half. But the Bulls turned it around and had a 31 and a 30-point quarter to 15 points in the fourth quarter. But like you said, by and large, Bobby Portis had what a night he's been and what a player. And he's developed into a really nice piece this year. And I think one of the things we were talking about off air about Bobby Portis specifically was the injury that he had last year that people, I think, tend to forget about when we're talking about Portis. And like, the first 2 years he was here, we saw glimmers of things that he could do and how he could be a special pick in his rookie year. And then kind of in and out of the rotation last year, you had Butler, Rondo, Wade here, just some different pieces. He didn't really mesh. And then he was playing secretly with those third degree burns on his foot for almost 2 months of the season at the end there. So like even going into the playoffs. So that's why this is the first year, obviously outside the suspension, that we've gotten a good, healthy look at Bobby Portis, and he's gotten quality minutes stretch over a course of his season. Even talking about extending Bobby Portis here, what have been some of the things that you liked out of Bobby Portis's game now that we've got almost a full season under our belts of Bobby Portis getting productive minutes with the Bulls?
Yeah, I feel like that was interesting news that came out over the weekend, that the Bulls will at least engage in some talks for a potential extension for Portis this summer, because they picked up his their club option to keep Bobby on board for next season, continuing on his rookie deal. And obviously the big priority this summer is going to be signing Zach LaVine. And you and I have talked at great length on this show about what exactly that will mean for the Bulls and what kind of contract he is going to demand. And there are other elements to what the Bulls will try to do this offseason as far as using the cap space that they have. But I think it's hard to argue against the fact that Bobby Portis, the more opportunities he's gotten this season, has made the best of said opportunities. And it was obvious, it was a really rough start to the season with a suspension and a fight with a teammate. That's not how Bobby wanted to start the year. But I think it's really key that what you mentioned about him playing through the injury last season, and the way that it was pretty weird that Bobby and the team didn't really reveal that until after the season ended. And so I feel like there was a significant amount of judgment on the performance or lack thereof, contributions or lack thereof from Portis by the Bulls fan base last season, when people seemed to quickly forget that he wasn't playing healthy. He definitely was not playing at 100%. And of course, with Dwayne and Jimmy and Rondo and all the other things going on, certainly wasn't given as many opportunities as he's been getting this season. So with the expanded playing time, with a healthy season, we're seeing a lot of really good things from Bobby Portis, primarily on the offensive end. But he is looking like a guy who the Bulls touted when they drafted him as a steal, the 22nd overall pick a few years ago. And it wasn't just the Bulls who said Bobby Portis at 22 was a steal. I mean, this kid was an SEC player of the year. A lot of people couldn't believe that he fell that far. And whereas a lot of people thought the Bulls were maybe going to draft for need and go with an addition to their backcourt, they took Bobby because they thought that the value he presented at 22 was just too good to pass up. And I think just now, this season, as he's playing with more confidence, we're starting to see that there's actually a good amount of truth to that.
So, Matt, it's funny that you said that you brought up the Bobby Portis was a steal in 2015 at the 22nd pick. Got me interested the same way it always does when I go to Twitter, because you can kind of see the timestamps of all these tweets that were back in 2015. And even after that, like even before the NBA season had started, there was a lot of tweets out there, especially from verified people. Like I'll read off a couple from you. Here's one verified Warren Shaw. Meanwhile, Bobby Portis looking like a draft night steal. Many GMs may regret. Michael Gallagher, still don't know how Bobby Portis slipped to 22 in the draft. He's everywhere, a very 2015-ish power forward and has so much to his game, such a steal. And Casey Johnson even tweeted out something in October 20th of 2015. He said, no Bulls drew votes for best at their position. Bobby Portis was second behind Justice Winslow for draft's biggest steal. And then there was one more. People are going to regret not drafting Bobby Portis. He's going to be a great fit in Chicago alongside Rose, which sorry about that, but
maybe not so much that, but
but just to capitalize on this, like he was like at the time in 2015, he was coming off a SEC Player of the Year. And I was telling you, Matt, this was at a time where, you know, think about the SEC, think about all the people that were at Kentucky and in Bobby Portis's draft class that he beat out to be SEC Player of the Year there. The one thing that makes me nervous about this is Bobby Portis not only starting and getting the starter minutes now, because this is kind of uncharted territory for him. He's only started in 18 games in three seasons as a Bull, and he's played 62 games, 64 games, and now 53. He's only started one game this season as well. On top of taking on starting role minutes, he's going to be pushed to the five. Like, that's not surprising coming off the bench. We've seen Portis play the five this year. And if actually you go to Basketball Reference, you can see the breakdown in the first three seasons of the position and the time he spent at each position, at the power forward and also at the center position. So it got me curious because there were a couple different times, especially this year, he switched off. This has actually been the first year where he's played a 50-50 role, playing power forward and center, coming off probably playing with Nico, if you can remember that. He's playing a lot of the five there. But last year, he played 77% of his minutes at power forward, only 23 at center. In his first year in the league, too, they actually used him 51% at center, but his minutes were down. So take that into account as well. So I think they're asking a lot of Bobby right now. Obviously, the Bulls don't have any implications of winning games, so this is not really that big of a deal, but I think it's a big deal in terms of Bobby Portis and taking that next step that we were hoping he's supposed to and he wants to. And I think the person that he can thank for this, for opening that door, is Cristiano Felicio, because to be honest with you, I've seen enough of him. I've seen plenty of Cristiano Felicio. I just don't think the dude can play. Maybe he can go to a bench role and figure something out, but the dude can't play. This maybe has opened up a door for Bobby Portis to maybe see what he can do at center alongside Lauri Markkanen in the starting role.
Yeah, I think Fred Hoiberg still has some work cut out for him as far as figuring out ways to make a potential Bobby at the five, Lauri at the four starting lineup work where the Bulls don't get completely hosed inside. I think that's still a bit of a concern, but you're not wrong when you say, you know, I think we all feel like we've seen enough of Felicio, even in that stretch of games, which was pretty painful to watch. And it wasn't that long of a stretch of games, just five games. But that's the other thing that we should mention, is that Hoiberg said, and Paxson echoed those statements, that essentially this whole rotation shakeup in the post All-Star break conclusion games of the season will be done in blocks of games. That's the phrase they keep using, that will be done in blocks of games. So as far as, you know, Felicio getting the start and Nwaba getting that start, and then Payne getting those minutes off the bench as the primary backup point guard, it seemed like, okay, well, so it's going to be a block of five games where we're going to do that. And then we got through that five block of games, and we're now one game into the next five block of games, and Nwaba is still starting, as opposed to, say, mixing things up, maybe trying to throw Valentine back into the starting lineup. But you wonder, is there going to be another five block of games between now and April when the season ends, when Felicio is the one who is back and starting at the five? Or did the Bulls get the look that they needed for this quote unquote player evaluation that they're doing and say, well, we saw enough of Felicio? Because, I mean, to me, look, I get it. It was not it was not pretty watching Felicio start and play in those games. And for the most part, he was a big negative in those games. Had a much worse impact than any positive impact, except for that one game where he went off for like 12 points in the first half and then didn't do anything in the second half. But is that it? I mean, is five games enough to say, crap, we made a mistake with the Felicio contract this summer or this past summer, and that was the look that we wanted to give him, and now we're probably going to go back to not playing him, or we're not going to give him any more starts from here on out? Because if the underlying, if the true subtext to this player evaluation is, yeah, we want to look at these guys, but we're also trying to tank more successfully because we accidentally had a 7-game winning streak before we traded Nico, then really starting Felicio is still in your best interest, is it not?
No, I agree with you. I'm with you. I'm just saying in terms of like having to watch him play basketball. I know we said that maybe there's an opportunity where he can figure, like, I'm like past that point now. I'm even looking at his stats in February, and yeah, he only started 5 games in February and got legit minutes, but I'm sorry, you can't have a center out there that's going to be taking on 25 to 32 minutes a night, and he's only giving you 3 rebounds in a night. Like, Cristiano Felicio, I would be shocked if he ends up, if he still plays 25 to 30 minutes a night, I would be absolutely floored and shocked if he ended up with a 10-rebound game. And that's crazy to say about a center in basketball. Like, somebody that's getting starting minutes, I get it, it's a tanking team, just want to see what he's doing. You're obviously paying him a ton of money. But man, like, I don't know, they're going to have to figure out somebody on this team to tap into what Cristiano Felicio can do and some of his strengths. Like, kind of the way that Wade did last year, and I'm not saying anybody on this team is going to be Wade, but the way that Wade played with him to kind of get all the strengths out of Cristiano Felicio. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the conditioning that he's in and sort of his body type and if he's not in shape. Like, I don't know about all those factors too that could be add up for Cristiano Felicio's game. But man, like, at this point, Portis is playing the best basketball of his life. And for a team that is trying to lose games and see maybe you can experiment this as a possibility for Lowry and Bobby to play together in strong quantified minutes for the next 20 games. And if Bobby Portis can sort of take that step and stay at the same level of production that he's been at, I mean, I have no problem with it. And I have no problem with trying to figure out if Bobby Portis can be a small sized center in this league, a guy that can be an offensive player at first and kind of be that agitator. And I wonder if that too, I wonder if that's going to play into sort of giving him more minutes, is what's his production level going to be like now that he's going to have to share the ball, if he's going to play 25, 30, 35 minutes a night and sort of not going out there against the second unit and just chucking up every shot that you see. Like, I'm curious how that's going to play out for Bobby Portis and whether or not he gets frustrated, or if that offensive production sort of dips. What do you sort of think about that in terms of him getting more role and having to share the ball a little bit more?
Yeah, it's a valid quandary to say, will he be as effective if he's sharing the floor and sharing the ball with Chris Dunn and Markkanen and LaVine, and Hoiberg's trying to get all of those guys their looks? Because No discredit to Bobby Portis, but everybody, including Fred Hoiberg, knows that those three are the ones that this season is all about and the ones that the future is hopefully all about. So as Portis continues to have these impressive games, you hope that with this switch, where starting tonight against Boston, he's going to be playing the five as a part of the starting lineup, he will find ways to keep himself in the flow of the game, still shoot open looks when he sees them confidently, but also function as a team ball kind of player within that starting five's pace and space offense that Fred wants them to play. And as far as playing the minutes at the five as opposed to the four, a lot of NBA teams are going smaller these days. There aren't too many dominant forces that you have to be worried about as far as overpowering the guy guarding them down low because of their sheer force of strength and size. And, Bobby's no midget. I mean, he's 6'11", and he's got some decent muscle to his frame. You know, there's still certainly a level of uncertainty to how he and Markkanen will work defensively together as the starting pair in the front court. I'm not expecting that experiment to go well, certainly in the early stages of this next and newest rotation change. But I am cautiously optimistic that Bobby can continue to have confidence in the way that he's playing on the offensive end as a member of this starting unit without hopefully without detracting from anything that Dunn and Levine and Markkanen are trying to accomplish.
Quickly, just to go back to what I was talking about with Portis winning SEC Player of the Year in 2015. Not only was this the year that Kentucky went perfect, a perfect 31-0, listen to the players that were in this conference. I know a lot of them are going to come from Kentucky, but just bear with me. Like, think about these types of players that were in college that Bobby Portis was able to beat out on an Arkansas team. Willie Cauley-Stein, Karl Anthony Towns, Devin Booker, Josh Richardson, Jordan Mickey, who played really well at LSU. Let's see. Tyler Ulis, Wade Baldwin at Vanderbilt. Like, there's names across the board in this SEC that Bobby Portis was able to beat out to be Player of the Year. So I'm just saying, like, what we've seen as an NBA player, there's still some substance to his college game, too. And obviously things can translate. But I like this step, and I like that there's been enough body of work that we don't have to have sort of that. I feel like there isn't that feeling that he's going to start and all of a sudden things are just going to go AWOL and all of a sudden everything's just going to blow up. I feel like I've got enough confidence that Bobby Portis can start. It's just going to be more so the adjustment to have to play center the whole time, to share the ball, play alongside Markkanen, and figure out what are the best ways to not only protect the rim, but spread the offense out too. And I think that was one of the biggest thing. And the last thing too is the decline in production from the bench. The bench has been fantastic for the Bulls in terms of point scoring, just out usually night in and night out. The Bulls bench has been way better than their opponents. So I'm curious to see what happens there with the Bobby Portis turning into a starter and how the bench's productivity comes. But maybe this will give more run for Noah Vonleh, who's seen kind of spotty minutes here and there. But let's see. I want to see what kind of production maybe he'll get in being able to maybe step into that role Bobby Portis is playing off 20, 22, 25 minutes a game.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and I was going to say that if Bobby's move to the starting lineup means that we're going to see fewer minutes for Felicio, like we were just talking about, if the Bulls saw that and said, well, that's enough of that, that they'd be doing themselves a disservice if they don't give those minutes to Vonleh. Because they took a basically free flyer on this guy, and I have been pleasantly intrigued, at least, to, you know, I guess that's the most lukewarm endorsement I can give a guy, but I have liked some of the things that I've seen from Vonleh when he's gotten minutes in this rotation, you know, game of musical chairs that the Bulls are playing. So if Bobby's move to the five in the start as a starter frees up some minutes for Noah Vonleh, and not just minutes, but perhaps some more opportunities to become a more focal point of that second unit, I would not be opposed to that at all, because you want to see if he's worth keeping around.
Yeah, I'd like to see Noah Vonleh get a little bit more of an offensive run here. So in five games that like they have pressed and said, all right, these are the guys that we're going to play. Here you go. This is what we're doing. And Vonleh was a part of that. That started against the 76ers after coming off the All-Star break. So we've got a chunk of games, about five games or so, that we've seen Noah Vonleh. He's only the most minutes he's played was in that first game, 17 minutes. He only took two shots, made one of two. But he had a pretty nice night against Minnesota. He was 3-for-4 there. He was 2-for-3 from three-point line. He's a fantastic rebounder. I think the raw ability to just have a guy that can be a solid defensive rebounder in Vonleh kind of mimics, I feel like, things that we were talking about with other players and being productive in that second unit. And maybe there's some tricks that he can learn from guys like Robin Lopez, who aren't doing a whole lot right now, but maybe he can mentor him into figuring out how to be a physical rebounder like some of the other guys that have found success. And I know Noah Vonleh can play offense, and I know he can be an offensive productive player. I've seen it in college before. I'd love to see that come back as well. And I know he can knock down the three, sort of like Bobby Portis can. Obviously not to the same clip, but maybe they can teach each other a few things. Maybe Noah Vonleh can teach him a couple things about how to rebound the ball, and in turn, maybe Bobby Portis can teach him a few things about knocking down the three-pointer. I don't know. So I would like to see more run, though. Like 18 to 22 minutes a night from Noah Vonleh off the bench. Like, it's better than going out there. And like, you have to understand, you know what you're getting out of Cristiano Felicio. Like, I don't expect to see anything different than I've seen already in the first five games that he's been run out there. Like, I just don't, like, I'd rather see these other guys. I'd rather see Vonleh. I'd rather see Portis get the more minutes and be able to start. Like, you're just wasting Bulls fans' time. And I think you're trying to maybe massage the mistake of giving Cristiano Felicio 4 years, $32 million, and keeping him around. Like, I'm kind of done with that. Like, even if you just, you don't say that it was a mistake, but Fred Hoiberg goes back and says, all right, Portis is going to start. We're going to give Vonleh more minutes. Like, I'm not going to sit here and bitch and moan about, oh, you paid Felicio all this money. You made that mistake. Like, I'm so far and beyond that I'd just rather see Vonleh, rather see Portis and whoever else you want to throw out there, because I'm just completely and utterly done from Cristiano Felicio. And I know there's some people on Felicio Island. I don't know if how many people are left on that island. It could be end up being like a castaway clip where there's only one person left there and it might just be Cristiano Felicio himself.
Felicio!
I'm sorry!
Felicio!
I'm sorry!
Felicio!
I can't!
Felicio!
So I don't know. I'm done seeing him, though. Done watching him play.
There's still Derrick Rose stands out there. I'm sure that there's at least a handful of Felicio stands.
All right. I want to get to something else, too. Just kind of wrap this up. We got a couple good questions from the texters, and I wanted to bring up one in particular because I think this has some kind of Bulls implication to it, too. And it got me curious, too, to think, because I had to take the whole weekend to think about it, too. I just didn't want to do any research. I was just typing guys' names into my phone as I was thinking it this weekend before I actually did the research. But the question came from the 510. I don't know where that area code is, but 510. He said, hey, guys, are there any notable players who went through the G League or the D League and came out as a great NBA player? I feel like the reason it has been discouraging sounding to players going to the D League or the G League instead of college doesn't seem too often like the competition and the level of being able to get to the next level in the NBA and be successful is there. Can you think of anybody off the top of your head? So before I even name any names, Matt, I want to see if you can get any guys that you can think of just off the top of your head that maybe you can come up with that were in the G League, signed a G League contract or a D League contract and came up and now are productive players in the NBA. Anybody that comes off the top of your head right away?
I mean, the two that come off the top of my head, not necessarily are like star players by any means, but a prominent role player on a winning team. And go figure, what a coincidence. Both of the examples that I can readily think of both played for what franchise? The San Antonio Spurs. And that's Danny Green and Patty Mills. Because I know that they both got their path to the NBA went through the development league for various stretches, and they both have played big roles on very successful San Antonio Spurs teams over the years. So those would be the ones that come to my mind first. I'm also pretty sure that Chris Anderson was an NBA D-leaguer for a while, and he was, I mean, make fun if you want, but a pretty important role player on those Miami Heat teams that went back to back in 2012 and 2013. So, those are the three that I immediately think of.
Yeah. And then Chris Anderson went and did some weird stuff. You know, you remember that in Florida where he got arrested with the meth and the child porn. Yeah. That was a no-no.
He's a weird guy.
So between that, so you brought up actually a bunch of names that I didn't even think of. And when I was doing the research, all those names came up. So you're 3 for 3, but like one that I can think of that's relatively recently, even as of last year, is Yogi Ferrell. And obviously with my Indiana ties, I remember following him in the G League. He was lighting it up. He got the opportunity to go after he bounced around from a couple different teams. He was playing in the G League for the Nets for a while. Then he got a 10-day contract from Dallas and just lit it up in January and February, ended up earning himself a 2-year deal. He was the February rookie of the year, or rookie of the month, I should say, February rookie of the month with Dallas. And that was sort of when he earned his contract. But he was lighting it up from three. He was shooting well. He was coming off as like this small player. So that was one that came off the top of my head. The other one was Jeremy Lin. If you remember all the way back to his days, he was with the D League,
yeah.
Bouncing around in the D League, came from Harvard, and then had his stint of Linsanity with the Knicks. But other than that, I couldn't really think of any other players. So I'm going to run through a couple just to give you an idea of some of the players and some of the levels of stars, or I guess productive role players that came out of the D League or the G League. So the D League actually started back in the turn of the 2000s. And it's funny that you bring up Chris Anderson, because he was actually the very first NBA player to be brought up by an NBA team. That was back in November 21st of 2001, where the Denver Nuggets brought him up. But a couple other names too. Former Bull CJ Watson was a D-League player in the Spurs system before he was brought up. A guy named Rafer Alston. I don't know if you know
Rafer
him or not.
Alston. Yeah, he was on that Orlando Magic team that went to the finals in 09.
Jeremy Lin, Chris Anderson, Marcin Gortat, actually, which out of all these players, I think he would be the one I would point to and said probably has had the nicest career. Him and Hassan Whiteside. Hassan Whiteside, if you remember, he was drafted by the Sacramento Kings. And then he was along with like Isaiah Thomas too, was there at the time. He bounced around in the G League for a while and then ended up finding his spot in Miami. But another guy too, and I think this is probably the most prominent one, if you want to say like had the most impact as far as a G League or a D League player, that's JJ Barea. I would say like his contribution to what the Mavericks were able to do and in that championship of being able to lock LeBron up, like, J.J. Barea, I would say, yeah, probably
and,
your
and
best
make
player.
Quick work of the Lakers, too. Barea was huge in that Mavs-Lakers series before the finals.
Very true. So along with those guys, like I said, Hassan Whiteside as well. You brought up Gerald Green. So those
Sean Livingston. He had a D-League stint after his injury, right?
Yes, Illinois native in Sean Livingston. So that's another one, too, brought up. So I thought it was interesting, though, like that question to me. Normally you can't really sit here and rattle off any names, but to tie it back to what the implications are for the Bulls. Obviously, Antonio Blakeney is putting up freak numbers with the Windy City Bulls. And like we had talked about, he was having 45 to 50 point games. He was doing things that were insanity. So I guess it brought me to the question of like, do you think it discourages players at all that are in the G League or young players thinking about college or maybe even thinking about overseas? Do you think there's anything the NBA can do to try to elevate the G League and figure out, I guess, a way for players maybe to have more of an opportunity to come up to the NBA? Or do you think they've already put those steps in place?
Well, I definitely think that the two-way contracts that are new this season are something good and hopefully something that the league can continue to build upon and work with the G League to sort of maybe expand upon how that works and give these teams opportunities to call up players and sift through the G League as a farm system, as opposed to what it is now, which is kind of a hybrid between a farm system and a place where you go if you're not good enough to play in the NBA and people already have figured that out about you. And then maybe if it's not a test or a showcase and a tryout to get back to the NBA, if you turn into a stud player in the G League, it can earn you a contract to play somewhere overseas and like a big time contract. I feel like that's kind of like that's the split between what the G League is right now, as opposed to purely a farm system for young talent that is trying to make its way to the NBA, specifically players that say went undrafted in the NBA draft. And I think the two-way contracts are a really good start to how they can go about trying to make it into more of a farm system, the way that Major League Baseball works. that that can see more examples of this kid got his start in the G League, went undrafted, or maybe was coming out of his one and done year with an injury and, you know, et cetera, didn't get his shot to get his career off on the right track. I feel like it's absolutely within the realm of possibility to have that become more of a farm system than it is now. And I think that, you know, the 2-way contracts are a good stepping stone, but I, you know, there can be more of that kind of stuff to get the G League to being something more relevant and NBA relevant than it is right now.
Yeah, this texter got me running down a list of like players that are in the G League. And this is the first time I've looked at this in a couple months, but guess the name that I came across, former Bull, former high draft pick, former first round pick by the Bulls. Can you name that player?
I mean, is Marquise Teague kicking around in the D League somewhere?
Bing, bing, bing. He's played 43 games in the D League. He's averaged 32 minutes a night. He's actually scored 17 points per game in the G League. Okay, not too bad. But there's some other names, too, that were pretty prominent in college. I remember especially from the Big Ten, like names like Melo Trimble, Derek Walton Jr., who was important to that Michigan team last year, Chicago native. Maybe some U of I fans won't like this, but Cliff Alexander. He was a total and complete bust at Kansas. That's another story for another time. But, yeah, I was looking at the roster as a whole. It's funny because I've seen some names that have come up and down from the NBA, part of that two-way contract they were talking about. And I think that was the perfect first move for this G League. Obviously, it's going to take a while. And obviously, the D League's been around for now, what, like 18, 19 years. This is just another step in the right direction of what they want to do in terms of a farm system and being able to not just stash away young guys at the end of a bench, but actually give them an opportunity to continue to develop their game, even if they're not seeing NBA minutes. And that's what I really like about these two-way contracts. And I honestly wish they would expand it a little bit more. I wish they would give the teams another one. Like, I like to see some of these players that you can give good run. And if they're having success in the G League, sort of like the farm system in baseball, you can bring them up and see what their success looks like. Just to remind people real quickly, Antonio Blakeney is the leader in points per game in the G League right now. He's played 31 games, 38.3 minutes. He's averaging 32 points a night on 24 shot attempts. His efficiency is 27.5. That tops the G League as well. He's averaging 6.7 rebounds and 4 assists a game. He's shooting 35% from 3 and 46.4% overall. So I know Antonio Blakeney, the season ends for the G League, I think around March 21st, 22nd. So we might see Antonio Blakeney in the back half, maybe like the last 3-4 weeks of the season, spruced in here in between games. But like we said, he doesn't have that many days left on his two-way contract to be eligible to play in the NBA. So interesting thought, though, here. So do you think that there's any way that maybe the Bulls would kick around the idea of signing Antonio Blakeney to a full contract, or you think that you need to see a little bit more from him at the NBA level?
Well, I mean, I don't know what you mean by full contract.
Just like a guaranteed contract in terms of a roster spot.
Something that isn't a two-way contract.
Correct.
I think they'd be hesitant to do so without getting at least a little bit more of a look at him at the NBA level. And no discredit to what Antonio Blakeney has done at the G League level. I'm pretty sure you can confidently say he's one of the most dominant players in that league right now. As far as what the Bulls plan to do with him moving forward, and if that might include a full-fledged, full-scale, legitimate NBA contract, I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily see that as a priority of theirs. You know, I already mentioned, obviously, you got to deal with Zach LaVine's contract situation. They're also apparently going to be talking to Bobby about a contract extension this summer. So do I think it's possible that they explore putting Blakeney on a real NBA contract as opposed to one of these two-wayers? Yes, but it's something that I think is not very high up on their priority list.
Yeah, if they didn't have to figure out what's going on with campaign, maybe this would have been maybe a little bit more likely. Just to let you know, too, as the G League wraps up, I know we're talking a lot about the G League right now, but Antonio Blakeney, if he keeps on this path for another 3 weeks in the G League, he'll be the all-time leader in points per game in the G League slash D League history of their 18 or whatever it is, 18, 19 years as a league as a whole. So the highest points per game right now was by Eric Green. He played 42 games in the G League, and that was 25.5 points per game. So Antonio Blakeney's already almost clipped that game, that games played. So, but if he stays around 32.5 points per game, he'll be the all-time points leader in terms of per game goes for one season in the G League. So pretty good from Antonio Blakeney. Got anything else for me, Matt, as we wrap up here?
Yeah, what's your call for this Bulls-Celtics game tonight? We got no Kyrie Irving. Second time the Bulls and Celtics have played this season. Second time that Kyrie has been out of the lineup. You think the Bulls make their fan base angry and accidentally somehow pull off a win? I saw something on Twitter earlier this morning. The Bulls have beaten the Celtics in five straight home games, dating back several seasons. So, obviously, very different rosters the last time those happened. But, yeah, five straight home wins against Boston for the Bulls. They think they make it six?
Yeah, this is disappointing. I wanted to see Kyrie Irving play against this Bulls team. Obviously, you're going to be able to get a chance to see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum again. So that's going to keep me interested at least for a while. I'm hoping that the Bulls can keep it competitive. Obviously, I'd like to tally up another loss tonight, but without Kyrie Irving, that's making it a little bit more difficult. I know Jimmy Butler's not here, but the brought up sort of feud between him and Marcus Smart that happened in the playoffs last year. I guess you could maybe keep an eye on that from some players that were on that roster. That's probably not going to be that big of a deal, but this will be interesting. But I'm just hoping the Bulls don't do something silly here and try to knock off Boston, as Boston's trying to climb to contain that number one spot. I know they're a couple games back of Toronto right now, so this is an important game for the Boston Celtics, but it's an important week for the Chicago Bulls too. When we were talking off air, it's like you play the Celtics team, you mess around and beat a Celtics team without Kyrie, and now you're going to go play two tanking teams also this week. It's like the Bulls need to make sure that, at least from a fan standpoint, where we want them in the draft to lose this game tonight. Obviously, they're not going to come out and say that. I'd like to see a productive first night for Bobby Portis. Obviously, only the second game starting, an 18th game as a pro starting in this league. So I'd like to see something good about Bobby Portis and Lauri Markkanen playing together tonight. Another maybe phenomenal performance from Chris Dunn, but keep this game close. But let's not mess around and tally up unwanted wins, especially late here in March.
Agreed. And you mentioned the two tankers we got coming up. It's Atlanta and Memphis, right? So hopefully we can we can make up for that accidental oopsie win against the Mavs, and you know, have a strong showing against Boston, but a strong showing in a loss, and then put Felicio and six or seven Bulls fans in the rotation for those games against Atlanta and Memphis.
Well, that's good about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Make sure you're liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We've got a new text and voicemail line we introduced last week. It's been phenomenal. You guys have been awesome in sending in texts, questions that are brought up, and topics that we're using on the show. So that number is 331-979-1369. Remember, you can leave us a text message and a voicemail there if you want. We're trying to play the best voicemails this week on Wednesday's show. So make sure you send in some voicemails, whether it's a question, comment, a rant. We want to hear from you. So dial that number up. Nobody's going to answer that phone line too. I want to make that clear here at the end of the show. It's because we had a couple people call the line but didn't leave us a voicemail. So it was just like missed call from this number, and then they just decided not to leave a voicemail. We're not going to answer that number. That number is just specifically there. You're going to hear an automated tone before. Stay on the line, leave a voicemail there. We'll be able to play it back through Google Voice. So shout out to Google as well. So that number once again, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow morning, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. For Jordan Malley and for Matt Peck, we are out. Have a great night. Enjoys Bulls and Celtics tonight, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.